Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
Experiences, it's the right thing to do. And I've had many, many plaintiffs and clients say they were relieved to hear after many years somebody finally say, you were wrong, and they feel somewhat vindicated.
While many lawyers may tell their clients never apologize or say anything that may be construed by their side as an acceptance of responsibility for an event, Bob Creo, the president of the Master Mediator Institute, says that an apology can actually be an effective way to bring about positive resolution for a party. Bob is not only the president of the Master Mediator Institute, but an adjunct law professor at the University of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania School of Law, an author of an ADR treatise, and a monthly CPR column on mediation called The Master Mediator. Based on his experience as a mediator, which includes about 150 to 200 days each year, Bob has found that an apology, when appropriately and effectively delivered, can bring about a very early and positive outcome. In this episode of IDN, Bob shares his observations on what makes an effective apology, who should make the apology, how it should be made, and most of all, why apologies are effective.
People want people to accept responsibility. And the denial that happens in the legal system, particularly in professional claims, legal malpractice, particularly in medical malpractice, where the law has been designed and structured based upon the rules of evidence and the admissibility of oral statements or written statements of liability, to do the opposite of what human nature is. And human nature is for people to, in a cooperative society, to come forward and acknowledge mistakes and say, I'm sorry, excuse me, accept responsibility and be accountable. And that's how societies work. That's how things cooperate. In the legal system, we've done the opposite.
The last thing you tell your client is apologize.
Right. Or to say anything. In fact, generally what happens is you cut off all the communication.
Right.
So you're two business people working together for years. There's a business dispute. And you as counsel advise them not to communicate anymore with them. Okay, so we shut off the communication, which includes the opportunity for people to at least acknowledge that something went wrong. In the many cases that I do with Monique, we have very serious medical malpractice issues, children being result going in for routine medical procedures and either coming out quadriplegic or dying or birth trauma cases where people go into the hospital expecting a happy event, birth of a child, and they have either the death or some other brain damage or some very, very significant issues. And almost to a person, the victims, the people who feel that they have been wronged are very frustrated that rarely is anybody on the medical side come forward early on and accept responsibility or otherwise acknowledge it. Over the last 10 years, a lot of research and innovative programs have been created in the medical area where people have done that early on, made apologies, acknowledgments, talked about bad outcomes, and offered compensation early on. So many of the mediations that we do, there's not even a suit filed. That there's been, I've done claims as early as within a few months of the event where the hospital has gone forward, they've gone into the families and said, we have made a mistake and we are willing to work with you to determine that. And in the acknowledgement, whether you call it an apology, acknowledgement, or acceptance of responsibility, is a critical aspect to change the thinking of the victims to from a competitive, hostile mode to one that is seeking justice and sometimes vengeance to one that is trying to solve a problem and be cooperative.
Since this is perhaps one of the most counterintuitive things that a litigation lawyer may hear, which is when you tell your client, don't say anything, don't communicate, because it could be an acceptance. It could be interpreted as an acceptance of responsibility or an acceptance of liability for this event. To turn that on its head and say, communicate and accept responsibility for the event and do it immediately. I guess let's walk through. Who should do it? Or what should be done? How do you apologize? When do you apologize? And who does the apologize? What are the mechanics of an effective apology?
In jurisdictions, whether in the United States or Canada or Europe or other places, that has a protection for mediation communications, a confidentiality, what many organizations have done is move the claim immediately into mediation. And that's what I'm talking about in the healthcare area. So those statements are all made very early on as part of a mediation process. And don't think of mediation as just the event, which is the session of everyone coming together. In most jurisdictions, such as Pennsylvania, the law goes back to initial communication with the intent to mediate. So if you start those communications early on and have a written document that says you're in a mediation program, which some hospitals have created early on, so that those communications are part of a formal mediation program, you can sometimes encompass it there.
So step one is make sure that you're in an appropriate context where you have confidentiality and you are safe in feeling that if the mediation, if the apology isn't accepted, if it doesn't preclude litigation or
doesn't compromise,
doesn't it make things worse? In other words, that by apologizing, you're in an environment in which you're not going to make your situation for you or your client worse than it would otherwise have been.
Right. Now, in the United States, in at least 35 jurisdictions, they have some form of acknowledgement or apology statute that protects certain communications in certain contexts, independent of counsel. So in some jurisdictions, if you're in an auto accident and you make an oral statement there that could be interpreted as fault, it's a specific exception and is inadmissible as an admission of liability. So it's it's an exception to the hearsay exception of the rule of admission to liability. In many states, Ohio, Colorado, some other states focus entirely on medical malpractice and healthcare providers and have a specific exception for oral statements that could be at all interpreted as compassionate or not even an apology, but interpreted in any way as accepting responsibility, and they protect those statements from admissibility.
So in some cases, you may actually have an existing background legal framework to make the apology. And if you don't have that, if you're in some place, like for example here in Italy, I'm not aware of there being any legislative background that protects a party making an apology to the other side. Mediation, or even outside of mediation, getting an agreement of confidentiality as to the particular communications may give you that environment, that safe context in which you can begin to make the apology.
Yeah. So if you have an example, Federal Rule 408 settlement discussions as being admissible, that generally only limits it to the proposals themselves. It wouldn't necessarily limit
that. And in some
that.
Countries, it's only going to be communications between counsel. It will not protect communications made by parties.
So you have to understand the venue and the jurisdiction you're in. Who should make the apology, which was an early
question. So assume we're in an environment where the apology is not going to make things worse for you and you want to make an apology. Who should make it?
If you can get the ideal situation, it's the combination of what I would call the perpetrator, the person that the victim perceives has harmed them. In the case of a doctor or a nurse, I've had cases of midwives who've delivered babies and had some birth trauma come and do it directly, and somebody, the highest possible person in the organization that would be available. So in hospitals, I had the president of a hospital come in, start a mediation by apologizing and then leaving. And so the ideal combination is the person who committed the perceived harm and the highest person in the organization. What's least effective, we take it the other extreme, is the outside litigation counsel. Oftentimes, it's viewed as a tactical or strategic apology. So the closer to the management of the organization, the ownership of the organization, the people who are involved in the organization, the more effective it's going to be. And obviously, apologies need to be sincere and heartfelt. If they are insincere and perceived as being strategic or tactical, the research has shown that it's counterproductive. It makes things worse.
But interesting point there, though, where you do have this inconsistency with the way the law is structured, because in many countries, the settlement discussions are privileged only if they're between outside counsel. I being an in-house counsel, for example, in many countries, my offers of settlement are not subject to the benefit of a settlement privilege in some countries. In other countries, it is. So in those places, actually, oddly enough, the thing that may be most effective, which is the settlement, is the one thing that if you have an outside counsel doing it, it is the wrong person is
it's
entitled
not as
by
effective.
Law,
it's
or
not
may
as
even
effective.
Be counterproductive.
It could be perceived as being counterproductive, the lawyer just saying what they have to say to try to get to the next step.
Right. So interesting. So maybe, again, mediation might be the mechanism or the tool that might, where you don't have the legal framework to get you beyond that problem to allow the party to do something.
Now, I advise people to never script an apology if they can work that way, and to do it orally and to do it from the heart. But I have seen very effective written apologies where people would read it because it was so difficult for them to work through it. I mentioned the midwife who came in and wrote out an apology that was, and read it aloud, that was had everybody in the room crying, including the mediator.
Wow.
And
what happened after that?
We settled the case, and it provided a platform, but it's a piece of the puzzle once litigation starts. Now, I believe early on, some cases, not as serious as a birth trauma, but there are cases where people would not pursue it, such as a death of an elderly person, maybe somebody's in their 80s and 90s, nursing home cases and things. I've been involved in things where I can clearly see that something went wrong, but at a certain point in time, the trauma of going forward just isn't worth it, and you want people to change their behavior, and that's what's often coupled in the, particularly in the medical malpractice area. A change of behavior is necessary too. So when you apologize and say, we had this procedure in place and the procedure failed, now the people want to see what procedures have changed. And we've also coupled the apologies with the victims coming in.
Right, they want to see they've had an impact. That
right.
Their loss hasn't been for naught.
Right, where the victims have come in and consulted with the hospitals and the staff about change procedures, and also have done in services where they've explained to the nurses and the stuff how their mistakes impact real people.
So that's part of the sincerity, to show that you're sincere, is that not only do I feel bad about this, but I've actually changed things as a result of
So it's a combination of acknowledgement, ratification of that acknowledgement, affirmation of it, a change in behavior, and a...
That you communicate that you've had a change in behavior.
And then restitution. So those are the things that we see to be three factors. Now, much of the research has shown six or seven other factors of people, and much more scientifically. But if you boil to that essence, sincerity, the change of behavior, and some restitution.
You get paying some money, or willingness to pay to compensate for.
And the restitution is sometimes non-economic.
In what sense?
I've seen people do lectures and name things after people, and just institutional changes and the educational and service programs. I guess that's part of what. Whether you call it restitution, it's make whole, I guess is a better word than restitution. How do we try to make whole the people involved on both sides of the table?
Okay. And so you mentioned the who is the person that's closest to the event, or the person
who's
perceived by the claimant as the perpetrator. The what is, it ought to be a sincere apology. How it ought to be conveyed in a context in which the apologizer doesn't feel they're going to make things worse. Let's ask when should you apologize?
The earlier the better. The earlier the better. That is the most effective. Obviously, if litigation has happened and it's years of litigation, I still believe it's never too late, provided it's sincere and that it accompanies the factors of change in behavior. An acknowledgement of that you've harmed somebody. And I've seen people, physicians and people have just taken it to heart in such a way, including in one case where a technician made an error that has essentially killed a little boy in an operation room. And what he did is he took his ID and after the mediation and put a picture of the boy in the back of it so that he, every time he made a move in that technician, he was conscious of the impact he had. And that was what I mean by restitution, Michael. It's beyond.
Right. And he told that to the parents?
Not until afterwards. Yeah, because he did it after the case was over.
Well, very powerful. Any other examples you can think of where you've seen of an effective apology?
I've seen people. A woman from West Africa who had a birth trauma case, and she had this wonderful little daughter who was cognitively impaired because of the birth trauma, and come to the mediation, and many of the apology forgiveness is tied to forgiveness and reconciliation, and people, much comes from a spiritual religious place. So I've seen people talk about it from a religious perspective. The ability to forgive and reconcile as being part of their basic core values. And I remember one mediation, this charming little impaired girl came in and met everybody, the lawyers, and we had a very difficult day of negotiations. And at the end of the day, the woman who was the mother, who basically said, "I bear no ill will to anybody, it's not part of my beliefs, and I appreciate the fact you've apologized and all, but I want to tell you I not only accept apology, I forgive everybody, I don't want to live in a world of hate and negativity." I mean, those weren't her exact words, but in a different language. "And I thank everybody for giving me financial security to take care of this child." And went around the room and hugged everybody, including the defense lawyers and the physicians. Incredibly powerful human interactions in the mediation contexts. And I've seen that many, many times. And I've seen physicians get up and make those kind of statements and victims and talk across the table and hug each other after at the end of the mediations, or have private sessions where they talk to each other about what's happened. And I've also seen it from a spiritual way where I had a case where the physician was very religious and so was the client, and they wanted to have a exchange on a spiritual religious basis. And I sat there and let the two of them talk without lawyers in the context of mediation and just listened and let them communicate with each other. Amazing, heartfelt conversations. And it stems from the core idea of accountability and responsibility, which is an underpinning of our societal basis, of what makes us human and be able to cooperate in societies.
Well, it sounds like an apology, an appropriate apology given earlier rather than later, maybe not only help you avoid a lot of cost and pain of litigation, but you may want to do it because it's just the right thing to do.
And it's good business. I've been in a case where a very serious case where very top-notch plaintiff lawyers and the parties came, the defendants came and said, "We don't want to make your demand. We don't want to make those negotiations. We have, we're making initial proposal of $4 million. And we want you to say yes or no." And they said no. Said, "We don't want your counteroffer." Went back, made a proposal of $5 million. And the plaintiff lawyer said no. They came back and said, "We'll make a proposal, $6 million. And the plaintiff lawyer...
At this point, you might as well just stay in the room.
Yeah, and the plaintiff lawyer said...
"Wait for the offer to keep going up."
Plaintiff lawyer talked to me, said, "Well, how do you evaluate this case?" And I said, "Well, I think you're in a zone of settlement. I think you, as plaintiff lawyers..." And interesting, this one of the lawyers was one of our MMI colleagues that was involved in this. I said, "I think you evaluate this case at $7.5 to $8 million. I think you want to get $7 to $8 million. Do I think $6 million takes care of this family? Absolutely. If you do a needs-based thing, is the case worth $6 million or $7 million or $8 million? I can't call it that close. Okay, I think you're in the zone of settlement, and you have to decide whether you want to move forward. You can go back and see if they have any more money. I understand they don't, but I never know. And the plaintiff lawyer stopped, and he talked to his client. He said, you know, we appreciate the fact they've come, they've apologized, they've come early on, no case was filed, no claim was filed. We think we have to act responsibly, too, and acknowledge that they have stepped up to the plate and have accepted responsibility and have attempted to and have put together a reasonable compensation package. And although we were going to come in here with a $7 or $8 million bottom line, the way they've behaved and all, we will accept a $6 million.
Interesting. So an acceptance of accountability on one side can also drive acceptance and a sense of accountability on the other side.
It can, I would say, mitigate or modify the translation of pain and suffering and harm that our legal system does to only economic damages. Yes, it can.
It brings about a more reasoned conversation about
yes.
How do you reach a conclusion.
Yeah.
Right. Well, on that, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.